welcome to the Migration and Diaspora Podcast, hosted by me, Loxan Harley, from Homelands Advisory, your independent migration and diaspora agency. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Aurélia Donard to talk about mixed migration in West Africa. So first, let me tell you a bit about Aurélia. She became Mixed Migration Manager for West Africa at the Mixed Migration Center, that's MMC, in Dakar in August last year. She first joined the MMC West Africa team as the 4MI Project Manager in January 2020. I'll tell you all about what that is in a moment, and we'll discuss it further during our conversation as well. Aurélia has worked for the past decade on community-led development and human rights projects for the Senegal-based NGO Tostan and Amnesty International's headquarters in the UK. She has also worked for the French Embassy in Senegal and for the so-called Extraordinary Chambers in the courts of Cambodia. Now that sounds like quite an extraordinary job. I've been trying to get Aurélia on the show for a while now because the MMC does so much great data collection on mixed migration flows in various regions of the world, especially across the African continent where I've worked a lot. Aurélia tells us all about how MMC does all this marvellous research, including through the Mixed Migration Monitoring Mechanism Initiative, that's the 4MI I mentioned earlier, which is a network of monitors working along key migration routes. 4MI collects data at a surprising level of granularity on a range of mobility issues. Aurélia talks us through some of the challenges in managing that work and some of the fascinating insights she's gained into the sub-region's emerging mixed migration trends. Just a quick word to really thank you for listening. If you've been enjoying the Migration and Diaspora podcast, and I really hope you have, please do share it with your fellow migration enthusiasts and leave a review on iTunes if that's your preferred podcasting platform. Oh, and you'll also hear the birds of Dakar squawking away during the interview, but don't worry, we do change locations about 15 minutes in, so please do bear with us. In any case, without further ado, please enjoy the show. Okay, Aurélia, welcome to the show. How are you and where are you calling in from?
Hello, Loxan. I'm good, thank you. I'm calling from Dakar, Senegal. I'm actually outside in the on the terrace of our new office, and you will probably hear the sound of birds around me, which is quite nice at this time of the year in Dakar.
That sounds absolutely lovely. And as I think I've mentioned to you and as others know, Dakar is one of my favorite cities in the world. So very, very jealous. But here in the UK, it's gonna be about 19 degrees today, which is quite
nice.
Quite a warm spring day.
Almost summer for the UK.
Exactly. Yeah, barbecue weather. Anyway, tell us, Aurélia, what is your own migration and diaspora story?
I'm French and I am a migrant. I've been living outside France for the past 12 years. In fact, I think I now spend most of my, or at least half of my life abroad. So I come from a family who likes to travel and live outside the country, which makes us a family of migrants. My grandfather came from Algeria during World War II, and with all his brothers, they decided to stay in France. I myself grew up in Somalia, Egypt, south of France, where migration is also a way of life. Marseille is quite an emblematic city shaped over the years by migrants. And here I am living in Senegal for the past 7 years. I also lived in the UK, as you know, and for 5 years, and met my partner in Belgium. So yeah, I think I'm a European and migrant person.
Very lovely story. And let me guess, the UK was your favorite place and you miss it very much.
It was not my favorite place. It was a really great place. I had a really good time in London. And I do miss it, though. I do miss it. Not the weather, for sure, but other parts of it, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool, great. And yeah, it's nice to hear those birds in the background in Dakar. Makes me feel like I'm right there with you. Let's get a bit onto what you're doing then. And well, first of all, you know, you're working with the Mixed Migration Center in West Africa. And what do we mean by mixed migration flows, first of all?
Yeah, that's a good question to ask initially. So mixed migration, it refers to cross-border movements of people in an inclusive manner, in the sense that we consider that all migrants, refugees, asylum seekers, whatever their status, profiles, or reasons for leaving their country of origin. So globally, people are on the move for a variety of reasons and motivation, and movements are increasingly dynamic and complex. So this definition is based on the idea that those in mixed migration flows travel along similar routes, use similar means of travel, often traveling irregularly, with or without the use of the assistance of smugglers, but they're all moving. So they're all in this mixed flow. So this inclusive definition is also a way to consider people who are crossing border as often subject of human rights violations, whatever their status, and to promote their human rights and to ensure that they're protected.
Yeah, very well said, a kind of cocktail of migration flows. And let's talk a bit about the Mixed Migration Centre, the MMC. Well, first of all, let's look at the bigger picture. I mean, what does the Mixed Migration Centre or the Mixed Migration Centres do, and why did the Danish Refugee Council set them up?
So the Mixed Migration Centre is a leading source of independent and high quality data. So we aim to provide information, quality research, analysis on mixed migration. It's a very polarized discussion around mixed migration, in general. And we came from the idea that there is a lack of data. And although even the data we provide might not be perfect, at least we do what we can to inform to the best of the knowledge available, decisions makers or programmatic decisions or NGOs, international organizations, etc. The idea is that through the provision of credible evidence and experience on mixed migration, the MMC can support agencies, policymakers, practitioners to make well-informed decisions, to contribute to protection and assistance for people on the move, and to stimulate forward-seeking in the sector responding to mixed migration, yeah, and always putting human rights at the center. So the MMC is part of and governed by the Danish Refugee Council. It's an interesting position because we could be a think tank. No? We could be just a research center, which we do, but we are also grounded in operational realities. And DRC helps us to do that. It provides, of course, the operational support to be in countries where we can actually interview refugees and migrants on the ground, but also it keeps us on track on thinking about, okay, but what this research means in terms of programmation, what do we do with that? And that's the point, no? Research shouldn't be, for us at least, shouldn't be only about researching a subject or to please the people who are thinking about the matter, but more to, okay, what does this mean in terms of actions? What can we do to improve the situation? And I think that's really the added value of being part of DRC. We started, I think, and I wasn't there, so I'm not the best person to talk about the history of MMC and DRC, but it's quite recent, actually. It's been like, I think, less than 5 years that we are together, and it's a very good journey. And we have a variety of ways to inform the program of DRC according to the different programs that they're having in the different regions across the world. So that brings me to also say that I'm talking as the West Africa coordinator, but we're six regions at DRC. We're in Asia, in Europe, in East Africa, in North Africa, in West Africa, of course, and in Latin America. And being based in all these continents with DRC every time allows us to build our field-based network and being stationed on key migration routes. So I think really that's the globality of the MMC. And yes, we talk about the Mixed Migration Center and not multiple ones because we are one. You can see through our publications, we try to the most to look at the routes. So sometimes to have a shared publication between West Africa and North Africa, but also we have global surveys which are the same across the regions. And I think that's also one of the strengths.
You preempted a few questions that I had, so that was great. And so I suppose it's not just a think tank, but really a think and do based along key migration routes around the world, where the DRC also has some comparative strengths and capacities too.
Exactly.
Great. And I mean, also, you know, I've been quite aware and familiar with some of the work you've been doing for a few years now, and you know, I've been to your offices and had meetings with your colleagues and your predecessor as well, and it's always been a really useful resource for myself working with other organizations on migration, especially in West Africa. So thanks for doing all that you do, and it is really useful to a range of stakeholders.
I'm very glad to hear that, thank you.
So let's get into also what you're actually doing. So what types of data do you collect in West Africa, more specifically?
We have a flagship project, flagship initiative, that is called the 4MI, which stands for the Mixed Migration Monitoring Mechanism. And it's a quantitative data collection. 4MI offers a regular, standardized, quantitative, and globalized, as I said earlier, system of collecting primary data on mixed migration flows directly with refugees and migrants on the routes. So what it means concretely, it means that we have closed question survey that invites respondents to anonymously self-report on a wide range of issues that results in extensive data relating to individual profiles, migratory drivers, means of movements, conditions of movements, use of smuggler, for instance, or not, aspirations and destination choices. So that is our global survey on migrants that we do with migrants directly, or refugees and migrants. The only selection criteria, I would say, are that for now, that people are over 18 years old, they're women and men, and we're really trying to keep this balance. And they have to have crossed one or more borders and be in the country where we interview them for less than 24 months. So these are the criteria when we're looking into the people who can respond or who are willing also to respond to our interviews. We do that through the monitors who are on the ground, and they're usually coming from the areas where we are collecting data. That is the case for West Africa. I know in some other regions, they're also using migrants themselves who are now living in the country, who speak the language of refugees and migrants on the route, who are arriving in the country, etc., which makes sense to ensure that there is a good contact with the respondent and also that you can understand them. In West Africa, we have a specificity in the sense that we interview people who come mostly from West Africa. There are many, many local languages, as you know, in the region. So it's also hard to ensure that everyone speaks the local language in question. But we have different profiles. And I think because of access reasons and due to conflicts ongoing in the region where we are located currently to collect data, in particular in Mali, Burkina, and Niger, we privilege to have people who come from the area where they're collecting the data. So for instance, we're in Tombouctou, we are in Yao, we're in Agadez, we're in Difa, we're in Zander, these sort of places. Sorry, we're not in Zander. We want to be in Zander. We also do qualitative research, and that is also important. And we look at, because quantitative data is great, it provides with a good volume, it provides you a sort of trends, not really, but you can still extract some general knowledge and understanding. But if you are to look, for instance, into children and youth and their access to sexual and reproductive health during their migration journey, which is a project we just recently did with the support of UNFPA, there are questions you can't ask in the quantitative data collection, also because it's very private. You need to have a setting that is much more, that can convey much more confidence and comfort for the person, for the respondent. So we also do with key informants in the region. There are many, many people who work closely with refugees and migrants, and we like to build on their expertise as well and their understanding of the context. Then, of course, we analyze all the data. We ensure that we are aware of the different trends. We have in the team here a mixed migration specialist who publish every quarter a mixed migration update about West Africa to ensure that we are up to date and not only us, but everything is published, is public and available for free so that we share the knowledge we get.
Okay. In case listeners have noticed a change in some of the noise disturbances, we did move locations just now because the birds of Dakar seem to be getting a bit too aggressive for us. But anyway, just getting back on track. I mean, that's a vast body of work that you've just described, Aurelia. And I have a few follow-up questions about that data collection process because it seems so complex. So first of all, I mean, the monitors that you place on different routes, are these on the main routes to, in terms of African to Europe migration, or do you also look at, I guess, key intra-regional migration routes too?
That's a very good question. I think initially in West Africa, at least when we started, and we started to collect data in 2017, but more efficiently in 2018. So it's been only 3 years in a way. We started under the funding of FDO, XDFID, and the point was to look at the migration towards the north. So of course we located the monitors along the routes going towards Europe. That is why in Mali, for instance, we're going from Kai in the south towards Mbuktu, going through Mopti, etc. However, these are also migration routes for West Africans in West Africa or in the African continent, because you cannot presume on where they would stop and which aspiration, like where they would decide to stay. So, or also be stranded in a way. So yes, but clearly one of our objectives now is also to be looking at much more, I would say, south-south routes in the region. And that is why I was mentioning Bender earlier for Niger, because that's where we see a lot of connection in between Nigeria and Niger. There are also areas like Sikasso in Mali that are very interesting, also in terms of smuggling, for instance, but also because it's a key nut in terms of migration routes. And then there is also the one subject that I really want to look into currently is the migration from IDPs towards Côte d'Ivoire, from Burkina Faso towards Côte d'Ivoire, because that is something that we see could happen much more in the coming months and year because of the expansion of the conflict in Burkina Faso. So clearly we try to locate ourselves to the extent that it is possible in terms of funding and opportunities, etc. But where we see that that there will be a need to gather more information.
And I wanted to move on as well to talk about some of the data collection challenges that you might face, because it seems like such a huge undertaking. Approximately how many monitors do you have?
In West Africa, we have 37 monitors in three different countries, so Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. And as I said, they have this access through their own networks as well. One of the challenges that we face for data collection was during the pandemic. The pandemic is still there, but when the outbreak started, we were conducting interviews on face-to-face basis. So we needed to look into not do any harm, either to the refugees and migrants themselves, but also to our monitors. So we moved very quickly to remote data collection. And that of course comes with all the difficulties in terms of identifying networks who can also refer to us refugees and migrants, who can provide their at least their phone number, also ensuring that people were trained to talk on the phone and not on face-to-face. I mean, that's a whole different way of conducting the interviews, but also to gain the confidence of the people. So we had to put a lot of different tools in place and train the monitors online in West Africa. So that was a lot of challenges, but actually we managed to do it quite well. And because these monitors have been working with us for the past 3 years, for a lot of them, they really build a network, a strong network of informants who can, who either work with refugees and migrants or then to meet them somehow on the route. So we managed to adapt very quickly. And that was done not only in West Africa, but globally. All the regions managed to adjust and to adapt. I cannot speak to the number of monitors across the regions, but I know that West Africa is one of the big ones in terms of volume of monitors, but this was really adapted everywhere. So I think that was one of the big challenges we had in 2020 that the MMC overcame easily. And also because, as I said, the need was there. It was important to continue to provide information on the situation of vulnerable people on the move during a pandemic who were we were all in a situation where we didn't know what was going to happen, but that refugees and migrants on the route are even more stressed and vulnerable. And
aside from the pandemic, are there any challenges? And I'm just thinking as well back to some challenges I've faced in doing research in the region. You know, is it difficult to bring that team of monitors on board, find the right talent, ensure that they all adhere to the same rigorous MMC data collection standards and so on?
I mean, of course, it's a daily management. Huh? So we have in every country, we have a supervisor that monitors the monitor and that looks into the data. We also have a data analyst specialist here in DECA who receives all the data and controls the quality. We have also a set of criteria to look into the data to ensure that the bias are eliminated to a maximum, etc. So it's a lot of different processes in place. We also have a project manager who is here as well and who overlooks everything. So in terms of operation, it's quite heavy, but it's working well. And I think also for us, it's important that we keep working with the same people because they've been trained along the years and they know the MMC and they know what they're doing. And as I said, they built like this network, which access is very important. So we try also to build on their expertise and to build the capacity of people. So yes, we're looking for talents, but we also supporting the professional expertise and improvement of managers.
Just as a side note to listeners, the conversation we're having, there are some linkages between this and an earlier episode with the Missing Migrants Project, where we also talked about some of the data collection challenges that they faced. And, you know, that project brings together different sources like media and then missing and dead persons records. And often it can come down to using the best data that there are available, even when there are some limitations that are unavoidable. I recommend listeners check that out. And also in the show notes, everything that we're talking about now, in particular MMC's website, but also the 4MI tool, I will link to in the show notes. I've used it myself and it is a really interesting tool and quite interactive in the way that it's designed. I also wanted to ask you, Aurelia, who uses this data and what kinds of applications are there? What kind of stakeholders are using it and what are they using it for?
Our objective is not to produce data for the sake of data. So clearly, we also have a dissemination strategy. As I said, it's on the website. Everything is public. We also launched recently the 4MI Interactive, so you can actually access the data that we collected during the COVID time. So with the specific survey related to COVID on the website, cross region, so you can see all the data from every region. It's really interesting to also look at all the different regions and to inform everyone. So in terms of who uses the data, I think mainly international organizations, UN, also IOM, the Missing Migrants Project. I know that they also mentioned the UNHC as a source of data. We work with UNHCR. We work with the High Commissioner for Human Rights as well as UNODC. So these are the different international organizations I can think of, and UNFPA, for instance, specific projects. Then we're also working with NGOs who are looking at either inform the design of their programming at the initial outset. So for instance, currently we're working on the preparatory phase of a very large project in West Africa and North Africa about youth, children and youth on migration routes funded by the Swiss Corporation. And we're working with Derbezom, Helvetas, GIZ on this project. So the initial phase is to inform about the profiles, the routes, where can people be located, and who are the refugees and migrants who would benefit the most from the support that they want to provide in terms of protection, but also in terms of education. So, and this you can see, they are more like development actors. We also have humanitarian actors who look at, do I need to position myself in a certain location? So for instance, do I need to position myself across the border between Burkina and Cote d'Ivoire? Because do I need to prep to have a flow of migrants coming? So people come to us with a variety of questions. Of course, we cannot respond to the different, like we cannot say, yes, please expect 10,000 people to cross border in the coming months, no? I think it's very hard to say these sort of things. You can try, etc. But what we would be looking into is more in terms of, okay, can we say that some people in Burkina, for instance, have the intention of crossing the border? Do they have the assistance they need? Are they potentially going to look somewhere else for this assistance, etc.? So we have really different, we are asking formation at various stages, no? So the initial programming, during the programming. So is there a change of route, for instance? So at one point there was a discussion in between in Mali, whether people were going through Gao or Sévaré, and if there was a change towards Tombouctou. And so we helped to look into that as well. This is, and recently also with the Atlantic route, we all know a lot of people were wondering whether there was a shift of route, etc. We seized the opportunity of a small grant to actually look into that and to work with in partnership with Save the Children and Medicos del Mundo to collect information and to at least bring the voice of the refugees and migrants. So even if we can tell that this is the trend, or this is for sure, this is like representative of the movement, we can tell, okay, out of the people that we interview, here is what is coming out. And for instance, on the Atlantic route, everyone was looking into why this route and why now. What we found is when you ask this to refugees and migrants, they will tell you, I'm moving because I'm looking for a job, I'm moving because, you know, and it's because my family is putting pressure on me, because my neighbor managed to move and to reach Europe, and now he's there and he's supporting his family here. So, you know, these are questions that are actually very real compared to what we think sometimes when we are looking at mixed migration trends overall. So we also here, I think, to remind organizations sometimes, and not only organizations, but the general mixed migration community, let's say, that what refugees and migrants are saying in reality.
Super interesting. And that really leads on to this next part of our talk, which is about the types of trends that you're uncovering through all this data collection. So I suppose just building on what you've just said, in terms of migration routes, I mean, what kinds of changes? I mean, we know that routes, especially when we think about the trans-Saharan migration routes, we know they change based on various factors, the enforcement of migration controls, and various other things that are going on in countries of origin, transit, and destination. But I'm curious as to where are we at the moment in terms of the changing of the routes? And also, I'm also curious to know, how quickly do these routes change and how often do they change, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would love to have the answer to that in terms of how quick and how often. I'm not sure. I think it's always hard to tell, because sometimes you don't know that the route has changed until you collect data about that in particular, yeah. Or until you have a real doubt about it. So it might have changed much like much longer before you actually look into the information itself, and also it might be more hidden. So it really varies in the context. I think, for instance, in West Africa, the closure of border seems to have made the hidden route, but that's something that we hear. At MSC, we haven't looked specifically into that. So it's not necessarily a question that we're asking whether people are more likely to use hidden routes than before. But overall, we assume, but again, I don't have evidence on that, that with the closure of border, people have been using more hidden routes, but probably still going in the same direction. So what we find in West Africa mixed migration movement is that it is mainly happening in West Africa to stay in West Africa. So as you know, almost 80% of the migration in the continent stays intra-regional. And it's also supported by the ECOWAS free movement of persons protocol. But then there are issues like extortion and corruption because of the lack of information on those parts, on parts of officials, on parts of refugees and migrants themselves. There are fees, so there might be use of smugglers at some point to avoid officials or to take a more hidden route. So it really varies. It also varies, the route I think varies according to the people and their means as well. Some people need to stop during the journey. Some people leave with savings, enough savings to actually do cross the regions at least and go to North Africa, for instance, quite quickly. There is the length of the migration is interesting as well. And some people will stop. So their first migration plan would be to go to Bamako and to work. We did recently an urban case study on Bamako, and we see that there are lots of different specialties in terms of work according to the nationalities, for instance. So some are known to be, like Senegalese, are known in the region to be tailors. So often in Bamako, you will find Senegalese tailors, and maybe their first plan of migration would have been to stay in Bamako, and maybe at one point they will have another opportunity, or maybe they will lose their job for COVID, or you don't know. And then they will maybe make another plan of migration and eventually go to Mauritania, why not, which is another hub that is not really, I would say, as known worldwide. In the region it's known, but outside the region, Mauritania is a big hub of migration as well. And there is a lot of exchange like that in between Mauritania, Mali, Senegal, etc. So the routes really vary according to what you're looking at. So if you're looking at the routes that goes to Europe, then in the past 3 years, we haven't seen much change, I would say. I mean, since I've been here, we haven't changed the location of the monitors, where their position remain the main hotspots where migrants will pass through. But we see some issues that are raised also. Recently, a colleague from DRC raised a concern that returnees from Algeria, for instance, might be not captured at all, but AP in French, meet with people who recruit to work in the gold mines in the north of Mali. And that is a suspicion. So there might be also the return route is also interesting to look into. And people might be stuck in a gold mine and not access the protection as fruit. It really depends what you want to look into. So it's hard to tell you whether the routes are changing or not. That is my response.
And also, I'm also curious to know, you know, you're looking at so much data here. So are there any findings that have particularly surprised you or that you found particularly interesting?
There are many findings that I find surprising.
What was the most surprising?
yeah, of course. Okay, maybe one, when I arrived, I was at the MSC, so it was over a year ago, the extent of extortion that migrants in West Africa is by...
Extortion?
of extortion. Yeah. In the ECOWAS, so the extortion, I mean, is not very surprising. But if you look at it, considering the ECOWAS freedom of movements, it's really striking that extortion is by far the most reported protection incident that migrants, that refugees and migrants we interview are facing in the region. So I think that is one of the things that surprised me. Another aspect that surprised me.
Do you have any sense of whether the issue of extortion has gotten bigger or smaller over the years? Because, you know, when I started living and working in the region in 2013, that was already an issue. So has that changed at all in scale, as far as you know?
As far as I know, no, it hasn't changed. But then again, we don't look into the longitudinal of data because we're not looking at the same people. And so it's difficult methodologically speaking to speak to that. However, it is still the most reported protection incident. So I think the scale is still enormous, whether it changed or not, it's still there and it's still important. Yeah. I think that's the most important part. What was also interesting during the pandemic is that people are still moving despite closure of border, risk with the pandemic, increase of protection risk of more and more hidden routes, as I was saying. People are still planning on migrating, and that is important because I think it speaks to the drivers of migration, and it speaks to also whatever the policy, whatever the closure of borders, which is quite harsh. I mean, you know, like if you want to migrate and you're stuck in a country, but still people want to migrate and are still planning to migrate and will find ways. So I think it's quite important to remember that, especially when we're looking at externalization of border expiring in the region or trying to refrain the migration movement towards the north. Or I think it's migration is in West Africa and is important and has been there for centuries. It is a way also of living in certain areas. I'm thinking of Kanché phenomenon in Niger, and how some policy decisions, whether national policies or international policies, have impacted, and not necessarily in the best way, the migration, because people still migrate, but then they might face increased protection risk more than anything.
Very well said, Aurelia. And West Africa is just such an interesting region of the world to look at in terms of migration. It's such a mobile region, and that's been the case for such a long time as well. And it's not looking like stopping anytime soon. And I also wanted to ask about MMC, and I know you've got a lot in the pipeline this year. So tell us a bit about what you've got going on, what your current and upcoming projects are.
Yes, so MMC overall, we have a lot of different teams and priorities across the regions that we're looking into. Our latest annual mixed migration review focused on urban migration, which remains a thematic that we're all looking into. Several regions are also working on children and youth migration, as I mentioned earlier. We also have a partnership with UNODC to look into smuggling of migrants. And we're also starting to revise our return survey. So I mentioned earlier some returnees issues from Algeria to Mali, etc. There are other returnees, including from the Atlantic route, that we want to look into. So we're working globally to revise this survey and to be able to implement it towards the end of the year. We're also very involved in policy discussions, and I realize I haven't talked that much about that, but around the Rabat process, for instance, we're working with ICMPD to develop scenario building and future projections for migration in North Africa and West Africa while engaging with policymakers. In West Africa, more specifically, also we're looking to continue to monitor the Atlantic route following the publication of our recent report, but also One issue that we're looking into, as I mentioned earlier, is the impact of the conflict of in the Central Sahel on the migration towards the coastal countries such as Côte d'Ivoire, but also Benin, etc. So I think that's also an interesting new aspect of our work as MMC to look into IDPs who might cross border, and it's a new, it's a different typology of respondent that we'll be looking into, but one that also needs to raise visibility about.
Right, IDPs are internally displaced persons, for those who aren't as familiar with migration as Aurelia is. Sounds very exciting. Really looking forward to seeing what comes out of all these projects. And thank you very much for being on the show. And just lastly, how can listeners connect with you and learn more about your work?
Thank you, Loxane. To learn more about our work, you can go on the website of the MMC. As I said, all our publications are public. And so they're in there. You can scroll by region. So the website is mixedmigration.org, very simple. And then you can connect with whatever region you're interested in. You have the contact detail of either the coordinator of the MMC in the region or the researcher, it depends on your question. But you can definitely contact me and I can pass along.
Fantastic. Links to all of that and more in the show notes. Aurelia, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really enjoyed this. Best of luck, and I look forward to hearing more.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Migration and Diaspora Podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can check out the podcast website at loxaneharley.com/podcast. There, you can subscribe to the mailing list or get in touch if you want to be on the podcast. Be sure to follow the podcast via your favourite podcasting platform and leave a review if you can. Thanks again, and see you next time.